Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday. You're listening to Bhavani at IEEE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for all of you today. My guest will be Jeffrey Smith. He's the Executive Director for the Institute of Responsible Technology, and he will be a guest at the Real Truth About Health Conference coming up in a few weeks, and will also be present at a screening that Slow Food North Shore is doing on January 26th. So he'll be coming on just a little bit, and we'll tell you more about all those exciting things. But first, I want to share some things with you that are in the news, and of course, share with you my weekly recipe. This week, I wrote about a New York State ban on styrofoam. Governor Cuomo is trying to get this through, and he has proposed a ban for the whole state of styrofoam, and we need all of you to email some of your elected leaders in New York State and ask them to support this statewide ban. So I have a link on my website in my blog to do that, and I'd really love it if everybody would do that. The problem with styrofoam and plastics in our environment is so widespread. It's not only in our environment, it's actually now in our bodies. Studies have been done, and they say that we are all eating about the equivalent of one credit card's worth of plastic a week. That's right, a credit card worth of plastic a week we are ingesting just in the foods that we eat and in the water that we drink. These tiny particles that are not even being filtered out in our water system are getting through. So please sign this petition. Also, we have the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and that is the commission that informs us if products that are out on the market are unsafe. And it turns out that they are not actually allowed to go public with information that they have unless the manufacturer agrees to it. And there was a situation where baby sleepers in a little baby rockers many infants were dying in these baby rockers, and they weren't allowed to go public with it because Fisher-Price wouldn't let them. And so this is a petition asking us to make it so that the product recall and the Product Safety Commission can go public. And the Consumer Reports is backing this petition. So if you could sign that, that would be great as well. And then Nestle's is at it again. Nestle's, who has been taking and bottling water out of California for years since their agreement has lapsed, they are still bottling that water, and now they are trying to take water from Ginny Springs, which is a hidden oasis in Florida along the Santa Fe River. And it's a freshwater spring that's also runs into extensive underwater caves, and there's numerous turtle species that nest along those banks. And they have applied for a permit, and if this permit is approved, they will be taking 1.1 million gallons of water a day from this natural spring. So we are asking everyone to sign that petition as well. And the last petition I'm going to ask you to sign is the National Environmental Policy Act, to protect the National Environmental Policy Act, which our current president is trying to do away with, as well as, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency, which he already has done away with so many of the safeguards we have with them. So this is another petition asking you to comment and protect the National Environmental Policy Act. As we know, Trump is trying to roll back all the things that that are good, that protect our environment and our health and our ability to make our own choices. And we really need to get everybody out to vote this year. So that's another thing that I hope all of you will get involved with. There's ways that you can do that. Of course, the Women's March is coming up on January 18th. There is a Women's March in Washington, D.C., and there's also sister marches around the country. There will be one in New York City as well. The Women's March in Washington, D.C. Starts at well, they're asking everybody to gather at the Freedom Plaza at 10 a.m., and the march starts at 11:30. And in New York City, they're asking you to gather at Foley Square at 11 a.m. And if you live in other parts of the country, please Google Women's March, and you will find out about the local march in your area. But it's really important for us all to get out there and let our voices be heard. Women make up the largest component of voters out there if we get everybody out there to vote. So let's do it, ladies. Let's just, you know, get people registered, get people out there to vote. It's really, really important. This weekend is the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York's winter conference. I'll be heading up there on Thursday. It goes from January 17th through the 19th, and this year it's in Syracuse. If you haven't registered yet, you can still register on location, or you can go onto the NOFA New York's website. But you can see the schedule online. They have so many speakers and so many lectures going on throughout the weekend. It's really a phenomenal conference, as well as fun things going on in the evening, film screenings and contra dancing and music. So if you can get to Syracuse this weekend, you will not be disappointed. Also, on next week, Tuesday, January 21st, is the 4th Annual National Day of Racial Healing. And Erase Racism, which is a local organization here on Long Island, they are offering 3 different time slots where you can participate in a 2-hour session where you can meet other people that care about inclusion and equity and having discussions, and they will be leading these discussions in Huntington at the Congressional Church. And it is a worthwhile thing to do. As we've all been hearing, there is such problems with racial equality, not just around the country, but here on Long Island, it's really huge. You know, you can have one town super affluent right next to another town with most people on social services. So if you care about healing the racial inequality here on Long Island, please come out to that. The Real Truth About Health Conference that I mentioned just a little bit ago will be starting on January 24th and goes through February 2nd. Check that out online. There's too many amazing speakers for me to list them all, but there are so many speakers that will be there giving their own talks and also parts of panel discussions all about our health and the environment. And it's really a phenomenal conference. They offer, this year, they're actually not just offering free plant-based lunch and dinner, they're also offering breakfast. So if you happen to be there at any one of those times, you will get fed as well. And they have vegan ice cream as well. So it's really a great conference. I recommend everyone coming out to it. It's in Melville at the Hilton Hotel, and it starts at 9 in the morning and goes until 9:30 in the evenings. So come out for that. And then, as I mentioned also at the beginning, on January 26th, my guest, Jeffrey Smith, will be present at the screening of his new movie, Secret Ingredients, and we'll tell you more about that during our discussion. But the film is about, is your food making you sick? And come on out and find out why. It should be a great evening. Actually, it's not really evening. It's from 3 to 5. It's going to be at the Landmark on Main Street in Port Washington. And this is a free event. The Landmark on Main Street has sponsors that sponsor a few community events a year, and they have chosen to partner with Slow Food North Shore to bring this film to all of you. So I hope you can make it for that. February 12th, Climate Wednesday starts up again at the Brooklyn Public Library. And February 12th, the first theme is going to be Our Bodies, Our Planet. And it's the public health crisis, climate crisis. And the Brooklyn Public Library is doing these every month on a Wednesday. And that should be a great thing. I will be heading down to Florida on February 12th for a cooking class that will take place February 13th at the Kashi Sustainable Ranch in Sebastian, Florida. And it will be a plant-based cooking class, Valentine's theme, and should be a lot of fun. So if you can come down to that please do. And now let me share my weekly recipe with you before my guest comes on. I made a vegan broccoli, spinach, mushroom, and tomato quiche. And basically, you can put anything that's plant-based inside this quiche. I also made one with a chili inside of it. I had some leftover chili, and I put that in this quiche, and it was also great. But it's really nice to have a brunch-type meal that you can make ahead of time, especially if you're having a brunch with regular quiche and you want your plant-based friends to be able to eat something. This is really a great solution. So I bought two prepared vegan pie shells. You can also make it if you'd like, but certainly buying a prepared vegan pie shell is an easier way to go. I used one block of soft tofu, one cup of coconut milk, a half a teaspoon salt, an eighth of a teaspoon of white pepper, 2 teaspoons of chopped garlic, a half a teaspoon of turmeric, a quarter teaspoon of nutmeg, 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, 1 teaspoon of dried basil, 2 tablespoons fresh chopped parsley, 1 to 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 1 broccoli cut into florets, and I really ended up using just about half the broccoli. It was a large head, so you can decide how much you want to use. 1 onion diced, 10 baby portobello mushrooms sliced, 2 cups of fresh spinach, 1 cup of cherry tomatoes cut in half, 1 tablespoon of aji marin, which is a sweet rice wine, 1 tablespoon of tamari, which is a wheat-free soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed, 1 tablespoon apple cider vinegar, and 1 tablespoon of water. And this recipe, I should have said, makes 2 quiches. So you buy 2 prepared vegan pie shells. You're going to start by softening the ground flaxseed in the 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and the 1 tablespoon of water, and let that sit for 10 minutes, and that becomes glutinous and helps act as your egg in the quiche and hold the quiche together. In the meantime, using a food processor, you can combine the tofu, the salt, the pepper, the nutritional yeast, the garlic, and the coconut milk, and pulse that until it's smooth. Then you can add the apple cider vinegar and flaxseed mixture into that and blend that again. In a hot, heavy skillet, you're going to saute the onions until they're translucent. Add the broccoli and cook those for a few minutes until they are starting to cook up. Then add the portobello mushrooms. Then add the tomatoes and the spinach. And let that cook all together. You're going to season it with the mirin, the tamari, and the parsley. And cook it until any of the liquid in the pan evaporates. You don't want the liquid. And if the liquid doesn't evaporate and you're ready, you think it's cooked enough, you can take it out and drain it before you add it to the pie shell. So you're going to drain those vegetables so that you remove any extra liquid. You're going to spread 1 or 2 tablespoons of mustard over the entire bottom of the pie shell. You can puncture the pie shell with the fork just a couple times to allow the crust to get crusty and not get soggy on the bottom. Then you're going to pour the mixture. You actually put the vegetables on the bottom of the pie shell, then pour the mixture over the vegetables. And you're going to bake it for 15 minutes at 425, then reduce the temperature to 375 and bake it for another 40 minutes. And that's it. If you choose to want to try the chili quiche and you have chili on hand, I omit the Dijon mustard, but I still would puncture the pie crust, add the chili on the bottom, and then the tofu mixture on top. And check that out. It's another really delicious take on quiche. And now it is my pleasure to introduce to all of you Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey Smith was named the 2017 Person of the Year by Masters of Health magazine. And for more than 2 decades, his research has exposed how biotech companies mislead policymakers and the public and put the health of society and the environment at risk. Jeffrey's feature-length documentary, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, was awarded the 2012 Movie of the Year and the Transformational Film of the Year through Aware Guide. And this film was seen by millions worldwide, and the film links genetically engineered food to toxic and allergic reactions infertility, digestive disorders, and numerous other problems that have been on the rise in the U.S. population since genetically modified organisms were first introduced. His books include Seeds of Deception, which is the world's bestseller book on GMOs, and Genetic Roulette was his film, the documented health risks of genetically engineered foods. And they expertly demonstrate why the safety assessments by the FDA and regulators worldwide are based on outdated science and false assumptions, and why genetically engineered foods must urgently become our top food safety priority. I will let Jeffrey tell us more. Jeffrey, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Thank you so much for making yourself available today to join us. We're really excited to have you at our film screening of your new film, Secret Ingredients. And I thought just a little background would be helpful for some of my listeners who are not very familiar with GMOs. Can you explain to my listeners what is a genetically modified ingredient?
Sure. Well, they take genes from one species and force it into the DNA of other species, primarily to turn those crops into herbicide-tolerant crops. So Roundup-ready soy is designed to be sprayed with Roundup herbicide, designed by Monsanto. It sells both the seeds and the chemical.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Roundup-ready soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa. And this, of course, has increased the use of Roundup and herbicides in general dramatically. We also have genetically engineered potatoes and apples that are designed not to brown when you slice them, and these could theoretically reprogram our gene expression. That's right, reprogram our own genes by virtue of simply eating the apple or the potato, and there's a lot of science to support that. There's also zucchini, a yellow squash, papaya engineered to resist viruses, plant viruses, and they in turn may actually suppress our ability to resist viral infection. And there's also genetically engineered salmon, which is available to eat in Canada, and they plan to introduce it in the United States soon. So we have a situation where there's these 11 foods that are genetically engineered, and most of the animal products in the United States are from animals that have been fed GMOs. And we know for sure that the animal's physiology changes. We know that animal feeding studies show that from the GMOs or the Roundup sprayed on the GMOs, we have potentially precancerous cell growth, higher levels of tumors and cancer, premature death, damaged immune system, damaged liver, advanced aging of the liver, altered blood biochemistry, changed hormones, et cetera, et cetera. We know that the Roundup sprayed on it has a lot of problems, and we can talk about that. And it's not just an abstract background issue, because in the movie Secret Ingredients that I did with Amy Hart, when individuals switch to organic to get rid of the GMOs in their diet, as well as the Roundup, which is sprayed not only on GMOs but a lot of non-GMO crops now as well, they get better from a lot of diseases and disorders. And it is so powerful, the reaction, that thousands of doctors are prescribing organic diets now and reporting astounding benefits.
Mm-hmm. Now, one question I get a lot, and I think, you know, many of my listeners may be wondering, you know, you hear that farmers have been crossbreeding for years to, you know, make a seed drought resistant. Or more tolerant to different environmental situations. But that's different than genetically modified. Can you explain to my listeners what that difference is?
Sure. With genetic modification, I mentioned that they transfer genes between species. There's also gene editing, where you simply change the genes without necessarily introducing genetic information from other species. But it's done in a laboratory, and it's done typically with a gene gun or through bacterial infection, and the result is it creates massive collateral damage in the DNA. There could be hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the DNA. There could be accidental incorporation of other genetic material from the used in the laboratories. There was genetically gene-edited cows recently that they discovered bacterial antibiotic resistant genes that could be that could have enhanced the amount of pathogens that were resistant to antibiotics. There were mice that were gene altered that ended up with retroviruses accidentally inserted in their genome. So the process is a lot of things, but it's not sexual reproduction. It's not the natural way of that plants, animals, and humans reproduce. It's done in a laboratory. It has unique risks. And the fact that it is unique and there's specific dangers was highlighted by the FDA scientists when they first reviewed genetic engineering in the early 90s, and they warned about these risks and said there need that GMOs needed to be tested for safety. But the person in charge of policy at the FDA, Michael Taylor, was formerly Monsanto's attorney, later Monsanto's vice president, and he overruled the scientists, ignored and denied the existence of their concerns, and said there's no real difference between GMOs and non-GMOs, therefore no safety studies and no labeling, and not even any mandatory notification is necessary.
Uh-huh. Now, lots of states have been trying to change that law. And I remember in Vermont, they actually had passed that, and then it was reversed. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on politically in trying to mandate labeling and you know, getting the word out there for people to know?
Well, because of the passage by the Vermont legislature, Monsanto and their friends heavily lobbied Congress and got a passage of a bill that made it illegal for states to require labeling of GMOs. They passed the responsibility onto the USDA, which has traditionally been captured by the biotech industry for years, decades in fact. And so the USDA came out with a fake labeling bill, a labeling bill last, not this past December, but the one before, which first of all, it doesn't kick in as a requirement until 2022. It has absolutely no punishment for companies that don't participate, and many large companies have said that they're not going to participate. It can obscure the fact that it's saying that there's a GMO by having a QR code or an 800 number, so you have to navigate or scan something in the aisles. And most GMOs appear to be loopholed so that there's most things that use GMOs will never label it as GMO. And they don't use the word GMO, they use the word bioengineered. So instead of saying right. non-GMO, they use the word no BE or BE for bioengineered. And we did a little contest at the Institute for Responsible Technology to rename BE, and the winner was Buy Elsewhere. So what we're talking about, however, in the film, which is going to be shown locally, as you mentioned, is the need not just to avoid GMOs, but also to avoid Roundup. And Roundup is sprayed on the grains and the beans in the United States, but it's also sprayed on a lot of other crops, fruits and vegetables in the fields, so it ends up going through the root structure into the crop that we eat. And I have to say that in the film, it becomes clear, but I'll just summarize, in the film Secret Ingredients, I'll just summarize by saying that Roundup appears to dismantle or damage virtually every foundational system and structure of our health. It prevents absorption of minerals. It damages and kills the beneficial gut bacteria. It creates leaky gut and leaky brain. It helps prevent the ability of the body to detoxify other toxins. It damages the mitochondria, the energy centers of our brain that are also linked to cancer and to longevity. It can mess up the production of neurotransmitters like serotonin, melatonin, and dopamine. It can damage the digestive capacity. It's described as a class 2A carcinogen by the World Health Organization's top cancer committee. And I'm just getting started. There's so many things that it does to us that it's interesting that there's more than 30 diseases rising in parallel with the increased use of the amount of Roundup sprayed on GMOs. Now, is it the Roundup or is it the GMO? Well, there was a French toxicologist, Dr. G. E. Seralini, who took genetically engineered Roundup-ready corn and gave it to rats for 2 years, and the rats had multiple massive tumors, early death, and organ damage. Very significant changes. But he also created another group that was fed the Roundup-ready corn that had never been sprayed with Roundup, and they got the same problems, the tumors, the early death, and the organ damage. So you might think, oh, it's the GMOs and not the Roundup. But a third group was fed Roundup in the water and never fed the genetically engineered corn, and they, too, had multiple massive tumors, early death, and organ damage. In fact, with the Roundup group, they ended up with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is very serious in that it can lead to more serious problems, including liver cancer. And it was at a level of Roundup, or its chief poison, glyphosate, in the water supply that was 437,500 times lower than the amount that our Environmental Protection Agency allows in our drinking water on a per body weight per day basis. So, in other words, we can ignore what the EPA says entirely. They're completely out of touch. They're working on behalf of Monsanto. We have them caught red-handed from documents from the recent lawsuits. We can't believe them. We want to avoid Roundup wherever possible. And the way to do that and round and avoid GMOs is to eat organic.
Mm-hmm. But even with organic, I mean, organic is the best answer we have, but even with organic, you know, you have the wind and you have the birds and you have, you know, there's still ways that some of the GMO seed can get onto other farmers' land, even if they didn't want that. I mean, we've all heard about maybe not everyone's heard about it, but I certainly have, of the farmers that are being sued by Monsanto, who never bought their seed, right? But they were growing accidentally some GMO crops.
Yes, it's the nature of nature to spread her bounty, and she spreads the GMO pollen, and the seeds can fly around, and also the sprays. It can be contaminated through sprays. So the non-GMO project, which you've seen that butterfly on so many products, they do require testing to see if contamination has occurred, and they have a 0.9% threshold. Organics do not require testing, so the actual gold standard is to have a product that is both organic and non-GMO project verified. However, if it's just non-GMO project verified, let's say it's a loaf of bread, no GMOs in the loaf of bread, but the wheat is sprayed with Roundup 3 to 5 days before harvest in many cases in this country, and so if it's organic, it's not allowed to have that spray as well.
Right. Yeah, I've actually, you know, read many reports of people speculating that the huge allergies that people have to gluten is not really to gluten as much as to Roundup.
This is in the film Secret Ingredients. I have Dr. David Perlmutter, who's written Grain Brain and Brain Maker, who has strong opinions about grain and wheat and others, and he talks about this very link. In fact, I think I was the first person to raise this this hypothesis many years ago. I was speaking in New York. I was giving a press conference with Mark Hyman, sponsored by Mary's Gun Crackers. It's called Beyond Gluten. And I got in touch with Dr. Tom O'Brien, who's one of the world's gluten gurus. And I said, here's my theory, that we know that between GMOs and Roundup, it can create leaky gut, which is linked to autoimmune disease and inflammation and allergies. It can also mess up the gut bacteria, which is also related to those. It can also activate the immune system and get in the way of the digestion of the proteins of things like gluten. And if you put all those together, wouldn't that be creating a precondition that would result in gluten sensitivity? He said, you're absolutely right. We have since surveyed 3,256 people asking what they got better from when they switched to non-GMO and largely organic diets, and gluten sensitivity was one of the 28 conditions that improved in these people. The number one condition was digestion, 85%. Then there was fatigue and weight loss issues and brain fog and anxiety and depression and allergies and sensitivities in general, and there was pain and skin problems, and there was also autism and Alzheimer's and diabetes, so many things. Now, the reason why we did the survey is that when I released my previous film, Genetic Roulette, in 2012, so many people were reporting changes in their health. We started asking people at my lectures how many people noticed a change, how many other people noticed the same change. And since then, at over 150 lectures, we have seen these same conditions expressed in the relative, the same relative frequency, where digestive problems was always number one. So I published a peer-reviewed article with not only the results of the survey, but all the other animal feeding studies and compositional studies that can explain why the digestive tract of Americans right now is being really seriously dismantled in a big way, their functions, by eating GMOs and Roundup, and why so many other diseases which are related to digestion could be having their result in GMOs and Roundup, both as it goes through the damage of the digestive tract and also directly, you know, because there's also the other aspects of Roundup which I've already mentioned.
It's so invasive. It's really scary. And the fact that still, even today, there's so many people that don't know about GMOs or just don't think it's important or just don't get it. What do you say to those people?
Well, I would say, you know, people say, how do I convince my spouse? How do I convince my kids, my parents? How do I convince others? I have to say that we have never seen a more convincing tool than the movie Secret Ingredients. That people tell us they've been trying for years to get their friends to eat organic, and they watch the movie and their friends become more adamant than they. What happens in the movie is people get better. You see them getting better from serious conditions. There's one chiropractic clinic that puts all these infertile couples on an organic diet, and they all have children. Many of them have been through the IVF clinics or the fertility clinics with no success, and they have 100% sex success rate in this one clinic. We have two autistic boys no longer on the spectrum in this film. We have people who had cancer and allergies and brain fog and overweight and all these things, and we have doctors like Dr. David Perlmutter and whatnot explaining that these changes that you're seeing in front of you, that are very emotional and very exciting, are not one-offs. They're not the exception. They're actually the rule, because they, the doctors in the film, are prescribing organic diets to their patients and seeing these results. Furthermore, when the patients backslide and decide to ignore for whatever reason, they go on vacation, they get dietary fatigue, they change the diet or revert in some way, their symptoms return, and then they become more adamant about keeping the diet because they realize just how closely the diet is related to the particular symptom. And as one doctor said, they don't want to have their autoimmune disease, and so they keep it permanently as an organic eater.
Mm-hmm. And I know I've heard so many people say, you know, when they travel, like they go to Europe and they don't have problems over there, and then they come back here and their problems return. You know, because the European Union has been much more stringent about allowing GMOs into their food supply, although even there they've been weakening it a bit.
So what happens in Europe is this. In 1999, the gag order was lifted on Dr. Arpad Pusztai, a scientist who had been given $3 million to figure out how to test GMO safety. And he was a pro-GMO scientist and wasn't expecting any problems. But when he tested on GMOs that were supposed to be completely healthy, there was potentially precancerous cell growth in the digestive tract, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, and damaged immune system. Moreover, Dr. Pusztai explained to me and others that it wasn't the particular gene that they inserted into the potatoes that caused the problem. It was the generic process of genetic engineering and the massive collateral damage that results that caused the problem, and that's the same techniques and process that's used in the crops already on the market. When he went public with his concerns, There were hundreds and hundreds of articles throughout Europe. In the UK alone, 700 articles within a month. And this alerted consumers to the potential dangers, and the food companies, this was on April 27th, 1999, Unilever said no more GMOs in Europe. The next day, Nestle said no more GMOs in Europe. The next week, virtually everyone followed suit. But the same companies that removed GMOs in Europe, where they had heard about it, continued to sell and feed Americans the GMOs because there was virtually no coverage. This whole affair was described as one of the 10 most underreported events of the year. And so it took us decades. It took us a decade or two to actually educate people about the health dangers, not through the mainstream media because they would not cover it, but through radio shows like this. I gave 1,000 lectures. I gave 1,000 interviews. I've been on, you know, some mainstream TV interviews, the doctors and Dr. Oz, and we have tremendous access through the Internet. And now 46% of Americans are seeking non-GMO food, and now the food companies that got rid of GMOs decades ago in Europe are doing the same in the United States to protect market share. So the European Union hasn't banned GMOs in food. It's the same companies that sell us the GMOs that banned it over there.
Interesting. Well, I want to talk about why kids are more susceptible than adults. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeffrey Smith, the Executive Director for the Institute for Responsible Technology, and we're talking about genetically engineered foods and the dangers of them. And right before the break, I was asking why children are more susceptible. Can you share that with us?
It's interesting. I wrote an article about this, and I was reading the closing arguments of the last of the three Monsanto trials, where Monsanto was essentially convicted by a jury as the Roundup caused the cancer of the plaintiffs, and they hid the evidence. And I was reading this final, the closing arguments of the plaintiff's attorney, and my name came up. And what happened was they had a memo, an email between executives, and they called it whack-a-mole. They said, you know, that Jeff just wrote an article about the dangers of GMOs being more dangerous to children, and they basically deployed their pseudoscientists to go and try and attack me. And the response by the other executives was, funny you should use the word whack-a-mole. That's what we use. That's the term we started using 2 years ago when we were going after scientists and those that expose the dangers. So it happened to be on the fact that GMOs were more dangerous to children, which is obvious to anyone that understands it, but except it's the disinformation by Monsanto prevailed in many cases. So children are more susceptible because they eat more food per pound, so they're more exposed. Their toxins are much more dangerous to them. They have a much bigger impact. They use food differently than we do. They use it to build their system, where we use it primarily to maintain with energy. So the structure of their bodies is more impacted by the nature of the food. And then they also have more susceptibility to allergic reactions. A much higher percentage of young children have allergies compared to adults, and it sort of tapers off. But you have, with GMOs, you have the potential for allergens. You also have, the gut bacteria is not well developed. You know, it just sort of gets inoculated at the time of birth, so there's susceptibility there. The blood-brain barrier is not well developed, and so things can get into the brain. The development of the integrity of the gut lining is also part of the developmental process. So when you put in the toxicities and the allergens and the carcinogenicities that you have potentially with GMOs and Roundup, then you end up with a new generation that's sicker than ever before. And this is what Dr. Michelle Perrow, who's in the film Secret Ingredients, describes, that starting it for her, it was in the early 2000s, she started seeing new complicated diseases that were not getting better, that had never been in the population of children. They were entirely new profiles. And she happened to be reading one of my books, and an alarm went off when she saw actually a picture of the altered gut lining of rats that had been fed these these potatoes in this experiment I referred to and said, oh my God, this is happening to the children. They're having leaky gut, et cetera, et cetera. She started putting the children on organic diets, and finally she could rein in these complicated diseases, and the tools that were working before started working again. But also when she put a family on an organic diet, because, say, one of the children had autism, the entire family started to get better. So she might have been using many different products and tools of the trade to treat an autistic boy, but when the whole family went organic, the father's kidney situation got better, the mother's weight dropped, the daughter's ADHD disappeared. And so these are the kind of things that she's seeing over and over again in thousands of patients.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me, that the whole explosion of these autoimmune diseases and learning disabilities and allergies, they were not existent, when my daughter was first born in 1979. I mean, you didn't see all these allergies. Peanut butter and jelly was a standard child lunch, And now, schools are peanut-free and camps are peanut-free. And, it's really the whole environment around allergies has changed because so many kids are so sick from it. And would you say that genetically engineered foods have a big part of that?
It is my belief that they have a huge part, huge. When you put human cells in a petri dish, there's a tight junction between them all. When you add glyphosate, the chief poison in Roundup, they split apart. Now, this leaky gut is a component in increasing allergic reactions. It's also linked to cancer and Alzheimer's and heart's disease and Parkinson's and autoimmunity. But what happens is you end up with undigested food proteins getting into the bloodstream because the gaps of the cells allow these pieces to go in that are not broken down. The immune system mounts an immune response to it, and they also can misinterpret by attacking then anything that looks like those proteins. And so it could attack the thyroid or the pancreas. It can have autoimmune disease as a result of these leaky gut. It's a very high correlation, autoimmune disease and leaky gut. But also allergies in general and food sensitivities in general are very related to that. So when you end up with glyphosate in the food supply, and in some cases in the water supply, and in some cases in the rain, and you end up breaking these gaps between the cells, you end up basically creating a fertile field for allergies. Now, peanut allergies in particular, they doubled in the 5 years after GM soy was introduced. GM soy and peanuts both have a cross-reactivity, so it's possible that the genetic engineering process of soybeans creates a peanut-like allergy. But it's also true that in cooked GM soy, the amount of trypsin inhibitor can be up to 7 times higher than in a non-GM soy. Trypsin inhibitor inhibits trypsin. Trypsin breaks down proteins.
I'm sorry, backtrack though. What is trypsin?
Trypsin is an enzyme in our bodies that break down proteins. And so if we have trypsin inhibitor in our food, that means we're not necessarily able to break down proteins in anything that we're eating as effectively. And so that means that the peanut proteins, which should be broken down largely in the stomach and in the digestive tract, can be lasting longer in its bigger capacity, in its larger capacity, in its most allergenic form. So there's like so many ways that genetic engineering could be enhancing allergies. For example, the BT corn, the corn that produces a toxin that kills insects, it's been found to create an immune and allergic type response in humans and in mammals. And that also, that when they fed mice the BT toxin, they not only reacted to that, but they started to react to formerly harmless foods. So they started to react to a whole broad portfolio of allergens that they weren't reacting to before. Also in another, in a BT, one BT corn, a new allergen was turned on. So actually, in the corn, there's an allergen called gamazine, which is not in non-GMO corn. I mean, I can go on for, I've actually given talks at medical conferences just about GMOs and the immune system and allergies and autoimmune disease. There's so much evidence that GMOs and Roundup together contribute to this skyrocketing set of conditions.
So scary. So why isn't there testing being done? Like the Food and Drug Administration doesn't do any of their own testing. They rely on the manufacturers and the biotech companies to do their own testing. Can you talk a little bit about the absurdity of that?
Sure. Well, when you read the memos that were made public from a lawsuit from the FDA, the scientists were uniformly of a single mind. This is dangerous. It needs to be tested. But the person in charge of policy, as we mentioned, Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, said that lied in the policy, saying that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that the foods created by these new methods differ from other foods in any meaningful or uniform way. And the reaction of the scientists was anger and rejection of that theory. One person was very angry, Dr. Lewis Pribble. His memos were featured in the New York Times article saying he fired off a nasty memo basically, saying that what's become of this policy document? There's no science in it. There's no discussion of the potential dangers. And another person who was the summarizer of all the scientists at the FDA, Dr. Linda Call, she said, it's the opinion of the experts at the agency that the process of genetic engineering is different and leads to different risks, and by trying to say that there's no difference, it's like trying to force a square peg into a round hole. So they were upset and overruled. So now we have a situation where there are no FDA safety requirements whatsoever. The EPA has a very, very small, narrow set of requirements just for those crops that are engineered to produce their own insecticide. And now with the gene editing, that actually creates a loophole so that there could be products introduced with zero government oversight. And that's the intention of the Trump administration. He signed an executive order on June 11th, basically that would eviscerate any there's very, very little research, very little requirements now, but it would eviscerate any requirements, essentially, if they have their way, for gene-edited products. Australia just passed that last year, where there's absolutely no oversight for gene-edited animals, plants, or microorganisms. And the situation with gene editing, it does create all these massive side effects, and it is so cheap and it is so easy that we could envision 100,000 or a million gene-edited organisms, especially in the microorganisms categories, being released over this next generation. When you release a gene-edited GMO, it transforms the gene pool, which means it becomes a permanent feature of nature, which means that we will be replacing nature. So future generations will not be inheriting the products of the billions of years of evolution, but inheriting the products of laboratory creations whose number one most common outcome is surprise side effects. This is a formula for a catastrophe or a cataclysm. In fact, there are genetically engineered bacteria that were nearly released in the 80s and 90s. One may have altered the weather patterns on the planet forever. Another, according to one scientist close to the experiment, may have ended terrestrial plant life by not allowing plants to grow in soil because bacteria in the soil would have turned the roots to alcohol. So we're talking about an existential threat that 7 out of 7 audiences where I've spoken the last 3 months declared it more dangerous than global warming. And so this is something people need to be aware of, and this is what we're now raising money to bring that in, to sound the alarm. So at responsibletechnology.org, we are gathering the forces, gathering resources so that we can put together a dream team to alert people all over the planet, the religious leaders, the indigenous leaders, the political leaders, scientists, educators, mothers, the medical community, that this absolutely must not be allowed to occur where we irreversibly replace nature in this generation.
But now that this information is out, it just baffles me how it can be being denied by our government agencies when it's...
Well, the thing is, the government agencies are largely captive. I mean, if we look at the documents made public from the lawsuits against Monsanto, they have their own people in the EPA. Jess Rowland was a Monsanto lapdog working quietly on their behalf, saying that if he could stop another agency from doing research on glyphosate and cancer, he should get a medal. Who should he get the medal from? From Monsanto. He was described as a valuable person by Monsanto's executives as they talked to each other because he was working on their behalf. So we have a situation where we may think that the regulatory agencies are neutral, but just like Monsanto's former attorney in charge of GMO policy in the FDA and Monsanto's lapdog was in charge of the committee that gave a pass to their glyphosate, saying it didn't cause cancer, even though the World Health Organization said it did. And what is? How did the EPA do it? Because they chose Monsanto studies to evaluate, not the published peer-reviewed studies that were more relevant. So they cherry-picked it to force a conclusion, and we know that they're not working on behalf of the public. They're working on behalf of the corporations. That's why it's so important that we get this information out, where this interview and others are ways that we can learn the truth, because we're not going to hear it from the companies, and we're not going to hear it from their enforcement wing in Washington.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you so much for the work you're doing, because it is so important that everybody knows this information. It's just, and it's so obvious. I mean, our society has basically been a big guinea pig for this GMO, these GMO foods. And if you look at the study, I'd say it's failed. I mean, because the amount of allergies and autoimmune, everything has multiplied so much since they've introduced GMO foods. And, it's just, I mean, would you say, I'm sure you know this information, have they compared our society, who's been eating GMOs for so many years, compared to the European society? Do we have more allergies here? Do we have more autoimmune diseases here?
We do, but it's not a fair comparison, because the animal feed that they use over there is genetically engineered, and they still use so much Roundup, it's found in most of the population. And you can check the urine of city dwellers, and they've got Roundup or the glyphosate active ingredient in their urine. So they're not really a control. I think an easier thing, a more practical thing, is for someone to just switch to an organic diet, take a few weeks, write a symptom diary, put the percentage of food that's organic, put down your energy level, whether you have any depression or anxiety, and every single symptom rated 1 to 10. The results could be life-changing. And I want to mention, I will be in Long Island, both speaking at the Truth About Health, the Real Truth About Health, and also at the screening of the movie Secret Ingredients. And I'd love to see some people from who listen to this broadcast and be able to answer questions.
Well, you will be there, and so many of my listeners will be there, because I've been publicizing it. So thank you so much for your work, and everybody who's listening, please come out and support the Real Truth About Health Conference and the film screening of Secret Ingredients. And just one last question. If somebody's seen Genetic Roulette and say to me that they've already seen one of your films, what's different about this film? But this film still is
Secret Ingredients is way better. I mean, Genetic Roulette had a big influence, but Secret Ingredients is way better. I have to thank my co-filmmaker, Amy Hart. She's a real artist. And the thing is, it's really an emotional journey. You know, Amy and I would cry all the time in the edit bay, for months and years, because it's so powerful and so emotional to watch these people's lives change. And it carries the emotional stories. It has more up-to-date information about GMOs and Roundup. And it really, if we were to do this at the showing, we could ask everyone to rate themselves in terms of a percentage of how much organic food they eat every day, and they could write it down. At the end of the showing, we'd say, okay, what percentage do you plan to eat organic going forward. Everyone increases their number that's not already at 100%. The possible exception is the Monsanto plant in the audience.
Right. Well, again, thank you so much. And everyone who's been listening, thank you for joining us. And I hope to see you at the Real Truth About Health Conference and at the film screening on January 26th from 3 to 5 at the Landmark on Main Street in Port Washington. Jeffrey, thanks again so much for joining us, and I will see you in a couple weeks.
See you soon.
All righty. Bye, everyone. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.